This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Who's the offense coordinator, Brock? Who is it? Now, I guess by the this is a problem doing a podcast.
Yep. Be careful.
By the time I say this, like, they might have an offensive coordinator, a person might be hired and all that. But, like, how many weeks have it been now since they haven't hired an offensive? It's like going on 2 weeks here, right?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Yeah, didn't we talk about it last week?
Yeah, I mean, like, a week. Great.
And the week before was right after he shot, he parted ways.
Right. It's been 2 weeks.
The end of last week, we said, oh, by next podcast, right, they'll have a hire.
Yeah, and by the way, I think we all kind of like the take some time and look around and talk to everybody and, you know, see who's out there, turn over every rock, see who's under every stone and dig every ditch, whatever it is you got to do to scour the earth and find whoever's the best person for this job. And okay, I might take a week, get this done. No, it's been 2 weeks. And that list keeps getting bigger. It didn't like start at one size and they're checking it off. Like, we just keep hearing, like, new names this week. Like, all Ken Dorsey. That's the old Miami quarterback, right?
Oh, couldn't throw a spiral to save his
poor
life.
Guy.
Yes. Yes.
Poor guy. But, okay, like, there's still more names they're just finding?
Yep.
All right, so I got to ask some questions here because that could lead to some...
This is your Salk sniff test.
Is it?
So you just sniffer.
I'll tell you what, man. My sniffer's been working better over the last year than ever in the past. I haven't gotten sick in a year. I haven't had a cold. I haven't had a fever. I haven't had a sniffle. I'm wearing this mask every day, and I don't get sick.
Wow.
So I don't, and I don't go out of the house. So all of these things together, right? The kids don't go to school.
Well,
you put it all together. I don't get sick.
Mike, I mean, Larry Hills will tell you that it's all about trade-offs.
Yes, I'm not commenting on the value of the trade-offs. Only that in a year now, I've yet to have a cold, which means the sniffer's working overtime, Brock.
Good.
Something doesn't smell right here.
Yeah.
Not supposed to take this long. And all the guys you're talking to are finding jobs elsewhere. Now, maybe the Seahawks just can't find the right fit. And everybody they talk to, they just can't find it. Now, there could be some problematic reasons there. Maybe you got too many cooks in the kitchen. Maybe you're not exactly sure what it is you want, which is why you can't find it. Okay. But it also might mean that people are saying, yeah, okay, it was a nice interview. I'm not comfortable with what you have going on there.
Right.
Right, like... double-digit people have said...
I don't know.
Some, passing on a promotion?
Could it be a combination of... Some, well, they've all found jobs elsewhere. I think I mean...
Or they have current jobs.
All right, maybe. Where'd Anthony Lynn go?
He has not landed.
I thought he did. I think he has.
Are you sure?
No.
I don't think so.
I thought he had.
Kyle?
I thought he landed. Dude, I'm the wrong. Howdy's not even here.
Offensive
today.
Coordinator, Detroit Lions.
Thank you. This guy chose the Detroit Lions.
Ooh.
No, it's not to say that the Seahawks
or he didn't
wanted
have an
him.
Offer from
I mean,
the
like,
Seahawks.
I don't. This is what makes this so hard. Don't you question me again, by the way. How
my
dare
bad.
You made me doubt myself. Some
I,
Fox NFL insider you are. You don't even know he's with
I
the
love,
Lions.
I love making you doubt yourself because I could just picture your head popping up.
Of course.
That little snap, like.
Thought he
is
was,
he?
I knew what? He was with either Philly or Detroit. I just couldn't remember. Which
I thought
one.
He had gone to Indy, so I was like, "Oh, I'm going to be quiet. Let me Google this."
Yeah, no, he had gone to Detroit.
Okay,
which means he wanted to play for that psycho in Detroit. Hey, you know who I want to coach with? This guy who's talking about.
Wait, you're willing to chew off my kneecaps? Sign me up.
I'm in. Now, look, I don't know what the reason is, Brock, but it's making me concerned. Anyway, no proof, none. This is totally Salk conspiracy theory garbage.
That the longer it goes, the worse news it is.
Yes.
That you don't, you've not been overwhelmed. You've not had like Sean McVay had with Brandon Staley. When he interviewed him, 5 a.m. he picked him up. By 5 p.m. they had the job. He didn't need to talk to anybody else. He knew exactly what he wanted and Brandon Staley was it. And they clicked and boom, done, over.
This feels more like, do you remember when we came back together after we'd worked together for the first 4 years and I took my sabbatical and then we came back and we were looking for producers and, you know, we kind of hired people and we were trying to figure out what to do. Bunker had left and it took forever to feel like Kyle was doing a good job. We needed a second producer. It was taking forever. And eventually we had to like reach back out to Howdy. That's how bad things got for us. Like, I know how bad things can get when you're looking for somebody. Not an option, Mike.
Daryl Bevel already got a job.
That's kind of what Howdy was.
And a great job with Urban Meyer coaching the number one pick in Jacksonville.
Isn't Howdy kind of our Daryl Bevel? Like, ugh, I guess we'll take him back.
All right.
I don't know what else we could do here.
Yeah, and if you know you want to carry through on that analogy or that comparison, there were probably a lot of folks that said equally, like, I don't want to be a part of
no.
the Arkansas
Salk
show.
Left once, kind of chaotic. Exactly. Bunker left. Kyle's yep. new. He didn't really know what he's doing.
Like, clueless.
I mean, or hashtag clueless. There were a lot of reasons to stay away from the Brock and Salk show with that.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So, I don't know. And then, of course, we ended up with Howdy. What a disaster. So I hope the Seahawks can do better than that and end up not with a Howdy. But let's assume for the sake of a quick conversation that people don't necessarily want this gig. That people aren't lining up saying, yeah, I'll do anything. I definitely want to be there. The way it felt like, certainly players were a few years ago. Why? Is it that, I mean, again, maybe the right guy's not out there and they haven't found him. And I'm open to that, too. Mm-hmm. But it's also possible that candidates don't want to work with Pete. It's mm-hmm. possible the candidates don't want to work with Russ. It's possible the candidates are looking at the Pete-Russ dynamic and saying there's something wrong there that I don't want to work to. There's just, that's a problem, and I would rather stay away from that issue. And there's a million other. I mean, you know, we've heard these stories about Pete's son. Is it Nate who's still around, right?
Yes.
Brandon
Nate is
left.
The receiver coach. Brandon is the coordinator at Arizona.
Okay, and we've heard rumors that Pete would like to move his son up in the coaching ranks, and maybe that's an issue. I don't know. I just, there's yep. There's a lot of unknown right now, and I don't like just bringing up all the questions in innuendo because I feel bad. I don't have any evidence that any of those things are true, and I want to state that very clearly. But the sniff test is up right now, isn't it?
Yeah, it and it's unique because as you said those things, like if you just if you took 100 football people and said, hey, would you like to work for Pete Carroll? Like, yeah, I mean, built a dynasty at SC, has won Super Bowls, Hall of Fame coach, and a super positive, high energy. People just love, players love to have played there. And so I think on the surface level, okay. I mean, that's crazy.
Like, if you ask 100 coaches, would you like to work with 100 offensive coaches, would you like to work with Russell Wilson?
Correct.
You get the same 100 answers, right?
The winningest quarterback in 9 years and, what, 6-time, 7-time Pro Bowler wins. Just sacrifices, does whatever it takes, unbelievably durable.
Has only had 2 offensive coordinators in his time, so it's not like he gets guys fired or anything like
nope.
that. He's not that. So if you ask the same 100 guys, do you want to work with Pete and Russ, what do they say?
Well, maybe therein is a little bit of the rub. Maybe therein is a little bit of the challenge, and therein is, my goodness gracious, the guy that just led them to the most points scored and franchise history and wrestle through 40 touchdowns and put up all these huge numbers, won 12 games, won the division, and he's out. Do I want to follow that? Like, where does the bar go from there? I mean, what am I, you know, not that it's like a fearful, like, oh, I can't do a great job or I can't come in here and elevate, but if you couldn't make that work and there were, what are philosophical differences? I think that's probably the question that most are thinking as they're flying to Seattle mm-hmm. to do the interviews or doing them over Zoom, I guess. These are not even in person. I don't think we're to that point yet, you know, at least by the rumor mill. So,
I mean, that would be a good answer, honestly. The disaster answer is that they're saying Pete and Russ are not on the same page. They want different things for the offense, and I don't want to play marriage counselor between them.
Right.
That's the potential disaster answer. I don't yes. know if it's true. Yeah. Again, I'd hate to like keep backing up, like
sure,
but that's the problem. That's when you go, someone doesn't want to take this job because they don't want to play marriage counselor. And I'll admit, Brock, when you hear the DK Metcalf sound, we'll play it here in a second. It does lend a little credence to this potential of like something got broken last year, and they don't seem to have like a good plan on how to fix it. So DK Metcalf goes on with Brandon Marshall, right? Where is this, Kyle?
I am athlete.
So like, okay. Anyway, he's on
I am energy boy. Like, you know, it's like a Munenori Kawasaki.
They should get him on. Yeah, they should get him on that. I think he'd be a good fit with Brandon Marshall.
Kind of an inside joke, very niche audience.
Who is this guy?
What?
Anyway, here's DK commenting on some of the Seahawks' offensive struggles this past year.
What happened to the Seattle Seahawks, bro?
I'd get teams just started to figure us out.
Yeah.
We've been running deep ever since Pete got there. It's play action, run the ball, go deep. Team just said, we just not going to let y'all go deep.
Okay, well, very honest.
Pretty simple, really.
DK didn't pull any punches there. He just kind of gives you the answer. Okay, so now I know I've got Pete Carroll who wants to run the ball and throw it deep, apparently. I've got Russell Wilson who wants to throw for a whole lot more yards because he wants to be an MVP. He's made that pretty clear. And I got DK Metcalf who's clearly willing to throw people and just say like, yeah, it's not working, whatever it is, because he's growing as a top wide receiver, wants his numbers, etc. Are you starting to worry that there is a lot to handle for anybody coming in?
Gosh, yeah. I mean, it's just, again, there's like a big part of me that as I'm absorbing and listening to this, I understand it. But this is still Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll.
And one of the best young wide receivers in the game.
And Tyler Lock.
Like, why wouldn't you want
this? And one of the great
this?
Organizations that treats players unbelievably. One of the great facilities, the greatest facility in the NFL.
So what?
An incredible fan base, incredible stadium, a winning culture, like so many positive pieces.
I
can't just dismiss every one of these things. Your sniff test has been pretty good through the decade. So I'm not minimizing it at all. But seriously, just as I start to go down that road with you and try to kind of walk on that side of the fence, the other side's like, but this is the Seattle Seahawks.
But the Seattle Seahawks have been this way since Paul Allen first bought the team, right? I mean, they were a top-notch organization from the moment he bought it. And then Holmgren showed up, right, and really gave some credibility, you know, in and around ruining Brock's career. But he had the je ne sais quoi, so to speak, right?
The presence. Just a big-time presence, yeah.
And then what went wrong? What marked the problems with the end of the Holmgren organization?
Oh, there were a lot of fights, power struggles.
Power struggle between him and who?
And Bob Whitsitt.
Okay.
And power struggle with him, Bob Ferguson, and power struggle with him and Tim Ruskell. But
specifically the Whitsitt and then the Ruskell one,
Ruskell.
Right?
It's been a season with two kickers on the roster.
That's right.
Yes. I mean, couldn't even agree on that.
That is what ultimately broke this thing and led to, I mean, Holmgren didn't just forget how to coach. That guy had been a really good coach, and I think he's a Hall of Fame coach now, right?
Well,
is he not?
Quite, no.
Okay.
Not yet.
Okay.
Maybe
next year.
Good chance he will get in.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I'm not saying there's a shot. I thought he was.
Yep.
As we've covered, no, it really wasn't. The first one was a shot. That one was an accidental shot. It wasn't on purpose, though. It was that split of two major power brokers inside an organization that couldn't agree on what they were doing. That will tear you apart.
No
and
questions.
People will
Always
run
from
away
the inside
from that
first.
As far as fast as they can.
Yep. So is that what's going on between John and Pete? I mean, they both got extensions.
No, it doesn't seem to be.
Nope. They seem to be both on the same page. They both seem to like it here. John would have had lots of options. You know, he didn't have to sign an extension. There were multiple jobs open and multiple opportunities, and he could have absolutely gotten one of the GM jobs if he wanted to go to Carolina or he wanted to go to Detroit or he wanted to go different spots. But nope, he decided to sign up for, you know, more years in this quality organization with an incredible fan base, an incredible culture that they built, right? Everything that he and Pete have. So those two seem to be in a pretty good place. So now you're talking about the next big power broker in an organization,
mm-hmm.
and that's quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Russell. And that, you know, and Russell is, and Russell's agent is, and, you know, he is very into his brand. He's very into wanting to become, what do we say earlier?
Mr. Unlimited?
He's Mr. Unlimited, but he wants to be bigger than just football. He wants to be the best to have ever played it, and then he wants to go and be bigger than that. And spends a lot of time in the off season kind of growing that and shaping that. And
His wife is doing a new series of commercials, by the way. Do you see her doing? She's doing Weight Watchers commercials.
Who?
His wife.
Sierra?
Well, not Pete's wife. Yeah, Russell's wife.
Wait,
Sierra.
Glenna?
Not Glenna. No, Heather and I were watching Hulu or something the other day and saw Weight Watchers. Like, is that Sierra? I don't know.
She's been all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, like, they don't turn down endorsement.
Mogul. That's the word I was looking for. Mogul. He's a mogul.
Yeah.
He wants to be a mogul bigger than just sport. And yeah, and I think he's probably at a place in his career, and we've said this a bunch, and you've watched, you know, about a decade in, you know, be it with Aaron or with Brett, or it took 2 decades for Tom and Bill, but you know, even Peyton and Indy with Ursay and that thing kind of broke. Like it's really difficult to sustain, man. It's really difficult. And especially when you win the whole thing early.
Yeah, duos have a tendency. I mean, look, we see this in bands all the time, right? I mean, and we've seen it with radio show hosts, Brock. I mean, you and I know how many different combos of radio hosts who essentially don't talk to each other ever, other than the couple of hours that they're on the air together. It sure seemed like something like that happened with Mike and Mike. I mean, probably the greatest sports duo, and obviously happened with Mike and the Mad Dog. I mean, like, when you kind of go through a lot of these famous in our industry anyway, whatever you would call it, you know, this tends to happen. People get a little concerned about the credit share, or they want to take the show or in this case, the offense in different directions and accomplish different things with it. And it does get, look, there's a million ways to view an offense and to look at, we can all watch the same season. We can all watch the same game and come away with completely different reasons why things didn't work. Right. You can point to the offensive line. You can point to the play calling. You can point to the quarterback decision making.
We know Mike will do that.
I sure will. Yeah, I absolutely will. Now,
point to Tom Brady's 3 turnovers on Sunday.
They managed to overcome that. Now, they came up with a few themselves, right? Yep. So, you know, those tend to balance themselves out. But, yeah, you can point to so many different factors, and that'll take you in so many different directions that I can see why it's challenging to figure out exactly what direction to go next. But if I'm Pete and I'm Russ, I am looking at myself in the mirror right now and saying, how can I help make this situation better?
Mm-hmm.
How can I lower the temperature? How can I reach out to the person that I need, which is the other one, in order for this to work and work the way the fans demand that it works? I'm looking at myself in the mirror probably and trying to figure what can I do to help make this work.
Yep. By the way, you just quoted Tony Dungy's dad. That's a
Mr. Dungy quote?
Yeah.
He and I go way back.
You didn't even know you did, but you did. Yes. How can I make this situation better? Yep. That is what Tony's dad would say to him through all of his journeys and everything that he battled and the racial divide that he had to overcome. Coach Dungy, both as a player, the quarterback of Minnesota, and ultimately as a player in the NFL, and then as a coach, that was always what rang in his head. And his dad would say, well, what are you going to do to make the situation better? So what are you going to do? What are you guys going to do right now to make this situation better? Are you going to just interview 15 guys? I mean, is that going to be beneficial? Doug Peterson and Anthony Lynn and some of the more, you know, known name commodities and play callers. And then we'll get to Ken Dorsey, a quarterback coach and passing game coordinator for the Rams. And like, we'll just turn over, as you said earlier, every stone and hope that, you know, that the two of us feel the exact same way, that it's just a knockout. Like, yep, that's a guy.
I hope that there's no real issue. I hope that no one has turned them down. I hope that no one has taken them. I mean, we haven't heard anybody say, I'm taking myself out. So I hope there's none of that. And I know that there's somebody listening to this right now going, this is just typical Brock and Salk, just making something out of nothing. Nothing's happened. You could be right in
this
case.
Let's go to the old write me a script.
Right.
Where multiple people are turning down the opportunity to work with one of the 3 to 5 best quarterbacks in the league in Russell Wilson. Can you imagine the depths of the dysfunction that would have to be?
Well, in one of the 3 to 5 best coaches in the NFL and Pete Carroll.
If you walked into that interview and came away saying, I don't want this job, the level of dysfunction within this organization is far beyond what we can even imagine right now. Mm-hmm. Now that is deeply concerned.
Do you think that that's happened?
No, not at all. So I'm encouraged by this. I think they started out by looking at all these retreads and Anthony Lynn and Adam Gase. I mean, even Doug Peterson obviously would have been a fantastic hire, but all these big names, established status quo offensive coordinators. And now we're getting down into the passing game coordinators, the 32, the 35-year-olds, the young, innovative minds. I think I'm encouraged that Pete's actually looking outside the box compared to the constraints that I would imagine he put on himself.
Why did it take so long to get to the young, innovative minds?
Convincing Pete? I don't know. I'm just workshopping ideas, but they go through.
So are we all.
Interviews.
We're all doing that, by the way.
And Russ is, I mean, Russ or someone in that room, Nate Carroll, is like, Pete, I mean, really? Like, we're going to go back to this? Anthony Lynn? Like, we talked to Shane Waldron, passing game coordinator of the Rams, pretty innovative, got our number. Like, let's get creative. Let's try. I mean, doesn't mean they're going to hire it, but at least having the conversation.
Well, and I'm glad they're having conversations. I don't mind them casting a wide net. I've been really, you know, I said that last week. I like the idea of casting a wide net and really turning over every rock. But 2 weeks? It's a long time.
Ken Dorsey was, you know, the Bills were in the playoffs and Waldron, the Rams were in the playoffs and into the second round. So some of them you got to wait towards their, you know, until their season ends.
All right. I'll buy that.
So I think
Lombardi, they could have been waiting on. Now, a lot of these guys have Lombardi taken has other job. Jobs.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like,
point, Shane
Lombardi's
Steichen's got a job.
Lombardi's got a job. Kafka's not going anywhere. Like, you know, there's some of these guys that, I don't know. You could write this either way. You got a good point there, Kyle. I want to be clear on this.
Well,
before people start, yes, you know, rioting in the streets and angry, like, you could absolutely be right. This could be a great thing, and maybe at the end of all this, Ken Walter's their guy, and he's a genius, and this is the way to do it. So I'm open to that.
Who
as well.
Do you say? Ken Walter?
Ken, what's his name? The kid from Miami we talked about earlier.
Dorsey,
sorry. Ken Walter was a...
No, I thought maybe you had a new name. Maybe
Ken Walter was a punter? Is he a punter? Wasn't he
maybe
a left-footed
a CFL
punter
guy?
I think he was a punter
running the Riff Riders.
You know,
can I add one last little tangent to this that I think would be fascinating?
Ken Walter was a punter. I'll have
he
you
was
know.
For the yeah left-footed putter for
Panthers,
the,
punter for Patriots, the, yes, Seahawks. Yep. He was here.
Yes, he was.
So you know, it's easy to get confused.
No, I got you. I just wanted to make sure that was not a name that I'd heard for coordinator.
Punters tend to make great coordinators. Yeah, it's what Al McGuire was going to do if he hadn't gotten into the booth.
If I don't know. Let's just say Anthony Lynn or one of these other Kirby Wilson or one of these other coaches that have been doing it for a while reaches out to Daryl Bevel and Brian Schottenheimer, mm-hmm, and says, what am I getting myself into?
Yeah.
What do they answer? Like, to me, Kyle, you're absolutely right. Like, you know, I think this is actually more positive. I think this is sticking to turning over every stone. I think this is going outside of Pete's, you know, comfort zone at times, or just people that he knows and names that he would trust. But if, you know, these coordinators are looking at it and going, okay, let me reach out to Daryl.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? I think Daryl Bevel's first answer is going to be about loyalty. They were unbelievably loyal. They stood by me and covered for me after the worst mistake of all time. For years, Pete stuck with Daryl Bevel after he should have let him go. So if I'm Daryl Bevel, the first answer I'm giving is, yeah, they're loyal.
Okay.
I don't know what Brian Schottenheimer's saying, and that's why what, you know, his the circumstances around him leaving are still so murky and so important. It feels to me still like he walked away. That's been my guess on the whole thing, but we just don't know. It's still murky. So I don't know what Brian Schottenheimer's saying.
I think both of them are going to say, and I don't know this. I have not talked to them either, you know, personally or professionally about this, but I think they would say, yeah, it's a demanding, difficult job.
But like that's true anywhere. You know, let me argue the other side.
No. Here, I'll give you the flip side. Ran into a coach the other day and coaches with the Broncos, and the head coach of the Broncos does not talk to the offensive guys. Like, you just run the whole show. There are many head coaches in this league that operate their offense. Sean McVay operates the offense. You operate the defense. Like, I got the defense. You got the offense. Pete is going to be more involved than most coaches in this league.
That I understand. But I still think that there is a level hey, do you want to be the offensive coordinator for the Packers right now? I mean, it's really fun. You get Aaron Rodgers, maybe, and everything else. You want to go work for the Packers? Let's see what you get. You get a team that's had Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers for how many years is it now? 20-something? And has been to 3 Super Bowls and won 2 of them during that entire time? Yep. You got Aaron Rodgers, who's now 1-4. In NFC Championship games. And oh, by the way, in the last 2 NFC Championship games, he quit on his team in the first half. And then in the next one, he completely threw his coach under the bus after not exactly helping him to win the game at the end.
Yep.
You want to go work there? You think that's a great relationship? Let's just review what happened at the end of the Packers game.
Yes.
They had first and goal from the, 8? Couldn't get in. And on both second and certainly on third down, Rodgers made decisions that were probably wrong. If he had run on both second and third down, could they have been down at the 1 or 2 by the time you run? Yes, absolutely. Yes. And does that make a completely different call from LaFleur? Yeah. But what does Rodgers say at the end of the game? I made a couple of tough calls, and I wish that I'd run earlier because I could have put us in it. No.
Nope.
Not even a hint of that.
Nope.
He says flat out, flat straight out, oh, that wasn't my decision. Oh, thanks, Aaron. We know it wasn't your decision, but you sure didn't help it. You sure didn't put the guy in a good position to do it. And oh, by the way, the disastrous drives you had leading up to that one meant that even if you had gone for it and gotten the two-point conversion, you're still tied kicking the ball to Tom Brady with 2 minutes left. How does that end? I've seen you talk about scripts. I've seen that one before.
Yep.
So this idea that LaFleur blew the game is bunk.
No, it's a very difficult job. I think that is absolutely. And as I was saying, difficult job and kind of pointing to the other side where you do have a lot of autonomy, yeah, there are going to be places. How about being Byron Leftwich? You want to be in between Tom Brady and Bruce Arians? You know, yeah, do you want to be Matt LaFleur? I mean, Matt LaFleur at least calls the plays. So if you're the passing game coordinator there or the guy that I like a bunch, Nathaniel Hasselbeck, Nathaniel Hackett, who has the title of OC, you know, yes. Yeah, I mean, this is what you get. The expectations for whoever it is, whoever they end up hiring, like the expectations here are Super Bowl or bust. Anything less than that with Russell and with Pete in this market, with this team and with the talent on offense, you're going to fall under criticism. And you may have philosophical differences even after you lead the franchise to more points than they've ever scored before and 12 wins and 40 touchdowns with your quarterback and an NFC West title. So, yes, this is a demanding job. You better be thick-skinned. It looks like Mike is signs are pointing here. And when we do a podcast next week, I'm going to guess we will finally have a name. And it will probably be somebody that's not called plays. That Kyle, if you're right and you kind of like the innovative way they're going with some of these different younger names, well, this is going to be a first-time play caller that's going to be thrown into that cauldron of expectation, and he's going to have to grow very, very fast.
Whew. Well, all right. We got Super Bowl now coming up. We got team set, Brock.
That's my doing. That's not Boy Howdy trying to get into the studio after being barred from from this podcast, so I apologize. I will go scream as
Please
soon
do.
As we're
And done. In the meantime, we could talk a little bit about what you guys are doing here for games over these next few weeks, right? We got Famous Dave's going to help you barbecue so you don't have to do it yourself. You don't want to be outside and wind and the cold.
You can't, as I ran into. I'm trying to Traeger this week, and it's raining, it's cold, you can't even get it up to temperature. It's not happening.
Tragedy. Well, easy solution for you, Kyle. I mean, you're not as close to the ghost kitchen as some others are, but Famous Dave's, you got to check out St. Louis-style spare ribs. You got whole country roasted chicken. You got Texas beef brisket. We got Georgia chopped pork. You got options galore. Don't forget, that's not it, because you can also go burgers, wings, sandwiches, apps, salads,
Please,
home-style
yes,
desserts.
On.
Yes, the whole deal. So this is a time of year where, look, spare yourself. Spare
ribs.
Spare yourself.
Oh, excuse me.
There you go. And you can go to the Ghost Kitchen. Pick up and delivery, including, Kyle, you remember where the Ghost Kitchen is?
Is it up north?
It's in Northgate.
That's right, yeah.
Northgate, the Ghost Kitchen. All right, adult beverages. Brock, what is going on there? Adult beverages available.
Is that the ghost?
It's haunting Brock's house from the Ghost Kitchen. FamousDaves.com is the address. FamousDaves.com. Open 11 to 8. Famous Dave's, America's favorite barbecue. All right, so that's, I guess, where we are here, Brock, in Seahawks world, and we'll wait and see. You know, I mean, it can't be too far away now, right, from having a name, and you know, maybe it'll be one that emerges here in the next 24 hours. I mean, we'll just kind of have to kind of wait and see here, and you know, again, my hope is that this is nothing more than speculation, and that maybe Russ and Pete aren't exactly on the same page, but that they're able to get on the same page, and that's all that really matters. So. You know, I guess you could kind of look at the first, you know, 25 minutes or so, or whatever it was, of this podcast and say, all right, you know, things are a disaster and things are spiraling apart and this is the beginning of the end. I don't think that's the case, but I do think it's time for everybody to make sure that that's not the case. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes. And the reality, and we have said this now for a few weeks and we'll continue to, and we'll say for the next few years that these guys are together, there's going to be friction. You've got what are called power brokers, and both of them are established, as you said earlier, top 3 to 5 quarterbacks and coaches in the league. And when expectations aren't met and you lose a home playoff game in the wild card round, you know, there's going to be sparks and there is going to be friction. And I think the one thing that you and I have done over these this decade is we just don't duck and put our head in the sand and pretend that all of this is perfect. Now, are there times that maybe we go down a rabbit hole and we get a little carried away? Sure. But there is some friction. There's going to be friction in this decision-making process.
Can you keep it to the good friction and not the bad friction?
That's right. Right. That's right.
And this is their opportunity, I think, to do that. So,
and it does feel, to your sniff test, it does feel that the more that they talk to, the longer this goes, it's probably getting comfortable or trying to get on the same page with somebody that's younger. This is not going to be an established coordinator. This is not going to be a Nathaniel Hackett. This is not going to be a Doug Peterson. This is not going to be, and frankly, those guys aren't, you know, they're in some pretty good jobs and they're not leaving their jobs, or they're recently fired as Doug was and wants to take a year off and knows there's going to be more change and wants to be a head coach again.
Well, and that's the positive spin here, right? And it's sort of what Kyle said before, which is that, you know, they started with the big names that they knew, and maybe someone needed to introduce Pete to some of the next generation, and here you go, and maybe that's where they end up. So, I mean, I may be wrong 100% with everything I said early, and this may end up being the best thing that's ever happened to the Seahawks and a good opportunity for them to move forward. We're just going to have to wait and see kind of what happens next. So, all right, eyes on it, ears perked up, nose sniff test sniffing, and we'll see where this goes. All right, it's going to be a bizarre. I mean, it's not just the Seahawks. You're kind of looking through the NFL this year. This offseason is going to have as much big name quarterback movement, certainly big name movement, big name quarterback talk, as any I can remember. I mean, off the top of your head, you're talking anyway about Watson, Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Stafford for sure, plus two big name rookies, including one who's supposed to be generational. And then whoever those guys, if they do end up moving, displace. So maybe Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe Sam Darnold, maybe Cam Newton, probably almost definitely Cam Newton. I mean, you just start thinking about some of the big names that are going to be moving, plus Drew Brees retires. Like, there's going to be a lot. Yep. Does Brady retire if he wins? Like, I don't think he does. I think Brady's back either way. But does he just look at it and be like, all right, I proved it. I won. Sorry, Bill. I win. I won like this. I'm done. There's no reason to continue. I have seven. Like, so you may see as much quarterback movement with big names as I think we've ever seen.
Ever. And it was huge last year because it was Tom Brady, right? I mean, he was the, like, come on, Tom Brady and Bill are not going to divorce. They're going to get on the same page. Robert's going to bring them together. Mm-hmm. They're going to settle their differences. And when they didn't, that was just, right, titanic. Like, mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? Tom Brady is not going to be in New England. He's going to play for the future Hall of Famer Bruce Arians. Like, he's going to lead the Buccaneers to a Super Bowl. But, you know, this one has chapters, as you said, 2, 3, 4, 5, has a young franchise quarterback that is done with his owner, that has said, I won't play for that organization anymore. We've seen it from corners, Jalen Ramsey. We've seen it from pass rushers, Ngakoue. But from a young, newly minted $30-something million a year franchise quarterback who the mayor of Houston is hoping desperately to get involved and salvage a relationship. Ugh. Yeah, he's out. And Matthew Stafford is going to be traded. And, you know, then, as you said, the dominoes that may fall.
Schefter set the over-under for QBs changing teams this offseason at 18.
Wow.
18.
That's insane.
Watson, Rodgers, Stafford, Prescott, Darnold, Wentz, Goff, Garoppolo, Newton, Bridgewater, Trubisky, Winston, Smith, Roethlisberger, Fitzpatrick.
Roethlisberger? There's some names on that list. Prescott, Roethlisberger. I mean, I just started with the ones that have emerged recently. I guess once you add all of that, I mean, that's madness. What, as a Seahawks fan, is there any combo that scares you specifically?
Yeah, I don't think you want Aaron Rodgers to San Francisco. I don't think with that defense all coming back, I don't think you really want Aaron Rodgers to come in here.
You
don't
want him in L.A. either.
Well, that's it. Is Goff on his list?
Goff is on the list.
That's the one that worries me. Like, the Niners are definitely a scary team, and they're sort of lurking there, right? They had a down year, injuries, response to the Super Bowl, all of that, quarterback problems. Put the right quarterback there, get healthy, and they could be scary in a hurry. But, gosh, I'll keep looking at the Rams, too, and just saying, man, can you imagine if they are able to get out from the Goff deal and get a Deshaun Watson? Can you imagine what that offense would look like with a guy like Deshaun Watson who could – think about how many times all Goff needed to do was, like, run 10 yards. And he's just like, I don't really want – remember Troy Aikman kept pointing it out in the second game against him this year? Like, he's got it wide open. Why doesn't he take it? He's super mad. Like, can you put Deshaun Watson in there? Not that he's a running quarterback. I know he's not, but he can move and is willing to move a whole lot more so than Goff is. Can you imagine putting a better quarterback into L.A.? I don't want any part of that.
Nope. And by the way, if someone's going to do it, it's going to be Demoff and Sean McVay.
Agreed.
Like they did it, you know, the first time around with a linebacker, and they moved pieces around, and they fired Wade Phillips, and like they're aggressive. They're, you know, they're young, they're aggressive. They made that commitment to Jared Goff, but I don't think that's one that they're just going to sit there and be married to and just say, yeah, you know, we'll settle. They're going to be in that stadium with fans next year, and they're going to be hyper aggressive. And yes, that would be a worse scenario. A younger Deshaun Watson going to the Rams? No, thank you.
Yeah, I don't want any part of that. And I don't want any part of Aaron Rodgers in San Francisco, which, you know, sort of a homecoming and the Cal thing, right? And all of a sudden he goes back to the Niners. Like, do you want to see Aaron Rodgers? Can you imagine both those things take place? And all of a sudden, that six times over the course of the year, you know, heading in, you got to face Rodgers twice, Watson twice, and Kyler Murray twice?
No, thank you.
Hard pass.
Yeah. And more than likely not going to happen. And the Rams don't have the draft capital to get a Deshaun Watson that the Jets do and the Dolphins do and others do.
Okay,
and
good. So. I mean, I don't mean to be fear factor here to scare everybody, but I will admit that's the kind of thing that'll wake you up at 4 a.m. like, ah! I don't want those guys in this division all the time. And I think I think the Seahawks would still win their share of games against them, but it just gets harder, right? Although I guess you could write the script. It doesn't really matter. I mean, you could put whoever on the other side and it doesn't seem to affect what happens with the Seahawks. They're no worse against good quarterbacks than they are against bad ones.
Yeah.
Some would say but they're worse against bad quarterbacks.
No kidding.
It is going to be just a fascinating, fascinating offseason, you know, and I think I told you guys, I told Danny and Galan earlier this week or late last week about, you know, these not having the combine and some of these rules that are going to be in place and how many are going to follow every one of those rules. And are you going to, you know, try to sneak guys in for workouts? Mm-hmm. Are you going to tell guys not to work out? Are you going to try to broker deals off to the side? Like there's going to be some fascinating machinations for, you know, these organizations that, you know, their lifeblood is these young players and is the draft and is undrafted free agents and all of that, and not having access to them in ways that they have had for year after year after year after year is also a complicating factor that will make this, just along with the QB movement, utterly fascinating.
What'd you learn championship weekend?
Oof. I learned that that Aaron Rodgers is just brutally difficult to deal with. Mm. That, you know, he's the beginning of that broadcast, right? And I think we even said in our broadcasts that when I covered him three times this year, he is just in a great place. Oh, he's never had more fun. I've covered Aaron for 15 years, never seen him happier and more fun and everything else. And then when adversity comes, and, you know, you fall down and you can't dig yourself all the way out, to just throw your coach under the bus like that, in the post games, just, ugh.
Yeah,
ugh.
I didn't like that. I mean, he deserves some of the blame. I think he made the wrong decision. He probably should have gone for it on fourth down. And I jumped in and made fun also, just like everybody else did. But
yeah,
I don't know. Like, in really thinking about it, they were already in an impossible situation. And unfortunately, that's the moment that everyone will remember from this game, and it shouldn't be. I mean, like, they got themselves into a spot where they were down 8 to Brady with 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you've...
And they didn't capitalize. They had 3 picks. They picked Brady off 3 straight possessions, yep. And
they didn't do anything.
Bupkis with the last 2 of them.
Yeah.
Nothing. And you don't take advantage of those opportunities against that guy who's the greatest of all time. Yeah, you do. You put yourself in a really difficult spot. But for him to just not own it at all, like, yeah, I should have run. Like, I absolutely should have run and should have put us down at the goal line and made that an easier decision. I didn't. And, you know, but nope, not my decision. Nope, wasn't me.
Yeah.
I just...
Whose decision was it to throw the ball away on second and third down?
Right.
Like, that was yours. Does anybody follow up with that question?
Yep.
Oh, Aaron, okay, it was not your call to kick. Was it your call to throw the ball into the ground on both second and third down?
Oof.
I'm just wondering, because whose decision-making was that? It sure looked like you had 5-6 yards of open space to run. Was Matt LaFleur in your ear making that decision also? I just that yeah. is I thought that was gross.
That really was pretty was gross. So that was probably
and
lesson
especially
number.
On the heels of what we saw from him last year in the championship yeah. game. He yeah. played a quarter and was like, "We can't win," and just quit. Remember that? Remember there was a fumble and he was like, "Man, I'm good." I know Cam Newton gets grief for that
You're
in the Super
still
Bowl.
On this.
It's true. Watch, go back and I mean, don't go back and watch that game. Just take my word for it. Yeah. But he's like, "Eh, we're good here."
You know what? I think this is over.
I think we're
it's
good.
It's the first half, but I'm done.
That's basically what happened.
Yep.
So. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think he'll be moving on. I think you're right about all of that. We can't.
I don't know. I don't know if he'll be. I mean, he's got 4 years left on his deal.
They drafted Love. I mean, like, they're going to have to, I think. Yeah. I think that something will happen there. And in the meantime, the Brady thing really is absurd. I mean, like, come on. He goes to a team with no preseason, no training camp, no ability to even like relate and get together and learn each other and get on the same page, practice like normal, all of that. And he's back in the Super Bowl
yep.
as a wild card team playing three games on the road. That's unheard of.
Yes.
I mean, he's 20 of 36.
But whatever.
Three picks.
Yeah, and
but started
made,
with three touchdowns and was pretty brilliant in that first half to build a lead.
QBR,
an unbelievable
75.
He
passer
didn't
rating
play great.
Of 73.
I totally understand. He did not play great in the.
He was outplayed by Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, except when he absolutely needed to, he put that ball on the money at the end of the first half to score
yep.
that touchdown.
Yep.
And at the end of the game,
oh, that was on Kevin King. The Huskies continuing to struggle. What a rough night.
Well, then twice Brady knew to pick on Kevin King.
Yep.
So. Look, I get it. He was not fantastic in the game. The defense was so much the story of that game. That Tampa Bay defense is legit. But and I think they're going to get waxed in the Super Bowl. So
you can't credit Brady without crediting Arians, Mike. So
you
pick your poison.
I can do so.
You
watch
tread
me.
Lightly.
Watch me do that. Yeah. No, I just did.
Watch me. Watch me.
What he has done in creating a sense of belief is just to your point. Without having, you know, the normal course of action, without going and hanging out with guys, without having extra practice time, without being around to just create that sense of belief for that program
right.
that had not been to the playoffs in decades and to create that and to do it right from the jump and to go down the field on those three third down conversions early on that opening drive that he was nails to put the dagger in the back at the end of that first half there just to create some belief that you're going to do. And even throwing picks didn't matter, didn't care. You know, defense responds and we're going to find a way to win this thing and finish it. And just, yes, to do so at 1 year younger than me at 43 years mm-hmm. of age. And to be so calm, cool, and collected along the way is just, yeah, just a phenomenal story.
And we've seen that movie so many times where, like, team becomes super team in the off season, and they, oh, my God, and then they completely fall apart because it takes a while, and they didn't. Say what you want, and maybe it's Bruce Arians. I don't know. I don't think so. I think it's a whole lot
Glue
more to
guy.
Do with Brady. I mean, you know, this, as I've said a few times, this has changed my whole view of the Brady-Belichick thing, and now I got to really think long and hard about the fact that Brady was by far the more important figure over the course of that time. So you get that.
Do you think Belichick watched? I tweeted during
the
game. I
saw your question.
Do you think he had to be watching? There's no way as a football guy you're not watching.
And then, okay, so let's say he was. I'm not convinced he was watching. Let's say he was. Is he rooting for Tom or rooting against him?
Against him all day.
Has to be, right?
Has to be. He better be. I'll be disappointed if he wasn't.
He had to be rooting against him. Had to be. I think.
I mean, the guy that helped him win, what, six Super
yep,
Bowls?
Six. But they divorced publicly. Who gets more credit? I mean, now this changes the story, right? Isn't Belichick a little... He's still the greatest coach of all time. But doesn't this change it just a little bit or maybe a lot of it?
So he's rooting against him.
I think he has to be. He's got it for his own legacy.
Tom Brady humiliated him.
And he's getting so mad at the Packers and so mad at their decision-making and so mad at Kevin King to not stay on top and stay in phase and so mad at that pass interference call. He's just...
He doesn't get mad. He just gets disgusted.
Disgusted,
it's not
yes.
mad. He's just no. disgusted by what he sees. What about the AFC? I mean, first of all, as I'm watching these games, I'm realizing that there is a chance I'm going to have to watch Bruce Arians against Josh Allen in the Super Bowl, and that might just be the end of me. Like, I don't think I can handle it. All Salk's hot takes go away at that point. Like, all right, I'm done, I guess. What? Thankfully, Josh Allen was not great. I mean, 28 of 48 and two touchdowns. Yeah, but an interception and inaccurate when he needed to be, and he's just not on the same level.
No.
Sorry.
No, and that team's not on the same level, and they just didn't have an answer. I mean, they played him earlier in the year and did not have an answer, and they
nobody
just don't.
Hasn't. Who has an answer? Who has an answer for the Chiefs' offense?
Yeah, well, the 49ers last year in the Super Bowl, your ability to rush four and to hit Mahomes and to not let him out again and again and again. And that will be why this is a three-point spread right now, is for that reason, because JPP and Shaquille and Barrett and Vita Vea back, and the speed of those linebackers, and, you know, the ability to just rush for the only chance you have, the only way you could possibly in any way, and even then it's brutally difficult, but if you can rush four and you can put seven on their four, you've got a chance. And that's why I think Tampa does have a chance.
The Bills got a sack in that game. I think it's like the first sack in three or four games against Mahomes.
Yes.
I mean, like,
yeah. Now they lost their left tackle, their best lineman, sure, tore his Achilles. Their right tackle is out, so they're on a backup there. Their interior, their line is pretty average. So, I mean, I think that there is enough vulnerability there if you are elite, and that's why Tampa's here. You know, Aaron Rodgers hadn't been sacked, right? They showed Aaron Rodgers' interception numbers, and not only did he throw three against Tampa of his six for the entire season, that guy also played games where he wasn't touched. And those guys rushed four. They got home. They couldn't block. They had backup tackles, and you couldn't block Barrett and JPP. Right. And I don't know if these two will be able to. So I think it actually keeps it a pretty decent game. So I'm reminded once again, if lesson number one is just how persnickety and arrogant Aaron Rodgers is, lesson number two in watching these games was impact the quarterback. And when you do it with four, you have a chance to win. And Frank Clark and big fella inside did it for Kansas City, and they got after him, and they blitzed him a whole bunch too because they could cover on the back end.
Because he's not,
you know, that
good,
was a matchup.
Because he's not a very good thrower of the football.
Yes. Yep.
I mean, those things help. So
yes.
But the other side of I mean, you're talking about the defensive side. The other side is the offense. The fact that they protect Mahomes. I mean, Buffalo got after everybody else this year. That defense was as good as it got in the NFL this year. They're really good. And yet the Chiefs protect them. And, you know, my friend Phil, who's in Minnesota, Phil Mackey, I was watching his Twitter feed this week, and he retweeted somebody who said, here's the Chiefs starting offensive line for the Super Bowl. Remmers is going to play left tackle. Hasn't played in a couple of years. I know their guy got hurt. Their left guard is a seventh rounder. Their center is a seventh rounder. Their right guard is going to be Wisniewski, who's been around for a while but was recently cut in November by Pittsburgh. And their right tackle is Wiley, who's an undrafted free agent guard.
Correct.
So it's not like they spent a whole bunch of first rounders.
No.
And
Fisher, the left tackle that tore his Achilles, was the number one pick. That's it.
That's it.
That's it. The rest are seventh round and undrafted guys.
So how does that change it? I mean, look, we've seen the Seahawks have trouble protecting now for years. And by the way, I mean, the Bucs, the way they protect Brady is lights out.
Yes.
Why? Why can't the Seahawks protect Russ?
I know.
And I can come up with a bunch of reasons, and I'm legitimately asking you this question. Is it that they've drafted the wrong guys? Is it that they haven't coached their guys to the point that they need to? Or is it that Russell Wilson doesn't do something either in calling out protections or in getting rid of the ball quickly or whatever to make them look better than they are? How do you factor
yes,
in
yes,
those?
And yes, and I divvy that pie up pretty equally amongst those three parts. And that's not great sports radio, but yes, yes, and yes. You drafted some of the wrong guys. That just, you know, the Jermaine Ifedi is not a good lineman and wasn't this year in a new place as well. And he can't move. He's not good. And, you've been wrong in some of the acquisitions. Why you bring back and spend another year with Upati, who's never going to be healthy, who's never going to be dependable and reliable and everything else. It took 4 years to finally develop Posick and put him where he should have been from day one. So that was a misdraft because he's not a guard. He's a center and a pretty decent one in this league and will probably sign somewhere else and play the next 4 years somewhere else at a pretty decent level at center.
You kind of wasted his Chief
years. Yes, he wasted his career sitting behind, you know, trying to play guard when he's not a guard. So, yeah, there's, I think, been some acquisition failure. There's been some development failure that, you know, you didn't realize that. But you had Justin Britt that was playing at a decent level, and so you had, you know, unfortunately, some multiplicity at a position that you had other
and
needs.
And that's because Justin Britt couldn't play at the other positions that you drafted him to play at.
And then, you know, you've got a system, and as you watch those Chiefs, they just scare you to death. if you're a defensive coordinator, you are scared to death because they will out-leverage you at any time with jet sweeps and fly sweeps and screen games. And then they will have a tight end that is as adept at catching the ball and finding any soft spot in the zone as anyone that we've watched play that position in a long time. So in a quarterback that, oh, yep, we were wrong. We brought one extra guy, and he can make him miss and extend a play and still make stuff happen and make it look easy again and again and again and again. So, yeah, I think all three parts of those, Mike, come into play. You have the Atlanta Falcons that this year, their starting five linemen were all former first-round picks. The entire offensive line was first-round picks. And then you contrast that with the Chiefs and Andy Reid, former O-line guy, that is getting what he's getting out of undrafted and seventh-round picks. I mean, it's not an exact science, kind of like projecting quarterbacks, unfortunately.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, well, Blue 88 here, Brock. Some good football questions to finish, because we haven't talked about football today. A little extra here.
We can get any Mariners in?
Want to talk a little Mariners. I have it on my list here. Maybe we can do that for a few minutes after Blue 88. All right, here's your Blue 88 question. John Schneider has no first-round pick, no third-round pick, four picks total in this draft. Is that right?
That is correct.
How does he work this in order to make it a John Schneider draft?
He has to get back in this draft because this draft is actually set up for him. Like, there are so many new GMs all around the league. There are so many that are going to be scared to death to make a decision and try to stockpile picks for 2022 because they don't know these 21 prospects nearly as well as they're going to know the 22 prospects and everything else. So this is a market in that trading that could go both ways, and you want somebody that's aggressive, that's experienced, that knows how to capitalize on those market weaknesses or opportunities. And that's John Schneider. That is what he is built for. That is why you extended him. He is a risk taker. It's why he and Pete work well together, because John looks at the upside of every one of these deals and doesn't worry necessarily about the downside nearly as much as some of us do. So he has to get back into this draft. Now, how he does that is going to be, like, you know, a couple years ago with Frank Clark, that was a big deal because that was out of character. That was not paying one of your young, productive, fruitful players and utilizing him as a chip to, you know, to get back into that draft. I think in this case, you don't have a Frank Clark unless it's Jamal Adams. Unless you're willing to say, young, productive player, but man, I don't think we can find and get to terms with him over the next 60 days. Here's an opportunity to maybe get a first and a third back from somebody. Or is it Bobby Wagner? But Bobby Wagner's at $18 million. He's on his third contract. Those are usually not the guys that bring back, you know, value. But those would be, I think, your only two guys. Tyler Lockett is not at a stage where I think he nets a first-round pick. I mean, in order to really be a mover and shaker, you've got to get back into that first round. And I think the only two possibilities would be Jamal and Bobby. And, man, would that be a huge, huge risk and a lot of conversation.
Question number two. You brought him up earlier, Bruce Arians.
Hall of Famer.
He is back in he's in the Super Bowl.
He wins, he's a Hall of Famer.
Is that what you're saying? I was going to say, how much, you know, what does this make you think about Bruce?
What does it make you think about Bruce?
He's going to be a multiple times coach of the year and a Super Bowl champ.
Yeah.
He's going to be the coach of the year this year?
No, regardless.
He's already won it twice? No, he's only won it once.
Well, he won it in Indianapolis?
Yeah, he won it in Indy.
Yep. He did?
Yeah. Yes. Multiple-time coach of the year, won Super Bowls as a coordinator, took two teams to a Super Bowl. If he wins a Super Bowl, there is a legitimate Bruce Arians Hall of Fame.
He's a lock. He is a Hall of Fame lock with a win next week.
You think so?
I know so. How could he not be, Mike?
Don't
they have the character clause in football? Isn't making excuses still a problem?
No.
Do you sit and look at him now, every time they show him in his little giddy-up on the sidelines, do you sit and have the same vitriol and disgust, or is it softened at all this season?
I don't have the, I don't right? have the same vitriol.
Is it because he's out of the division, or why has he been so much less annoying? I don't even hear from Bruce.
I think it's mostly that. We don't hear from him all that much. Okay. Otherwise, I think he would still bother me to the same degree.
I mean, you do have to give him some credit here, okay? Yes, he lets Tom coach. But he does, and he doesn't meddle and interfere. Yes, he's still, you know, the big cheese, but he's let Byron Leftwich go with it. Yes, even through adversity of losing three and four games in the middle part of their season and kind of calling Tom out and walk that delicate line to you know, still have an edge, which Tom has been used to for two decades, and, you know, helping that crew come together. And I'll tell you, man, those guys, you can see it. They love to play. They believe in their quarterback. The old line is really solid. The additions they made have all paid, and those dudes play hard. And to have won three road games, and if they get this one and beat the Chiefs, yeah, I think Bruce Arians, that's a legitimate conversation down the road as a Hall of Famer.
So what you said, this is the second Super Bowl. What was the first?
Arizona?
No.
Who was head coach?
Ken Whisenhunt.
Oh, it was weird.
So let's correct the record, please. Tell me, please, about Bruce Arians' first Super Bowl. I'd like to hear that one.
He was as a coordinator for the Steelers.
Oh, he was a coordinator. Yeah, yeah. We usually hand those out to coordinators. Yeah. That's how that goes. Yeah, I'm not buying that. Thanks. All right, question number three.
Two rings.
It's a good thing I'm here to correct. No, he doesn't. He has one ring right now, right? Or did he get two with Arizona?
He's got two with Pittsburgh.
Okay, he's got two with Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
So this will be one over the sea.
All right. Good one to bring up. All right, question number three. Brock, who's faster, DK Metcalf or Tyreek Hill?
I think I was watching. Have you guys watched the Usain Bolt documentary? I Am Bolt.
No, I didn't know such a thing was out there. I would watch that.
Yeah, yeah, you should watch it.
I'm fascinated by Usain Bolt. I follow him on Twitter. I find him very entertaining.
Oh, then you would love this. It is remarkable. His training in Jamaica, his coach in Jamaica. It is just awesome.
Right. I'm into that.
I Am Bolt. So you should absolutely watch it, and and how motivated he was by Gatling.
What?
So DK is Usain, and Tyreek is Gatling. And in most of those races, Gatling's out first. And then Usain just runs him down. And that's what would happen. Tyreek Hill in 40 yards is absolutely ahead of DK. Mm-hmm. If they have to run 100, DK is catching him.
Yeah, it seems like Tyreek kind of gets tired at the end of some of those. He looked like he got tired in one of those last week.
Yes, he was exhausted. Because his tank, his just turnover, his acceleration is just unbelievable. He's unbelievable. It'd be so fascinating to compare. And back in the day, they didn't have the technology we do today, right? With the greatest show on turf and Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce. And who was the other little speaker?
Ozahir Hakim?
Yes.
Ricky Prohl?
Yes. Ozahir. If you had the same tracking catapult device to measure their acceleration, their velocity, their speed, it'd be so fascinating to watch those guys compared to this crew. But I think these guys are even faster, and including the little punt return of the fumble. That Mecole Hardman is unbelievably fast. And then Tyreek, every time he touches a ball, you could see those defenders like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. You know, let's rally. Everybody better try to get to the football because he is just so unique. So I would say 50 yards and under Tyreek, 50 plus DK catches him.
Well, we saw DK catch
Buddha
earlier, so I guess it's possible. Right, there's Blue 88 for today and for this week. Yeah, you mentioned the Mariners, Brock. I will admit, I'm starting to feel like it's the little baseball turn coming. I think probably
turning a bit.
Next week we have the week between the week off, right? The football week off, and we get the Super Bowl. So we'll probably talk a little next week. Next week we'll probably have the coordinator and some things to get to. But I think once Super Bowl is over, like, I'm pretty pumped, honestly, to talk about where this Mariners team is at and where they're going. I don't know that they're going to be good yet this year. I'm not ready to state anything like that, but they're already likable. And I think that's what they proved to me last year. And I don't want to lose track and forget about that. They proved to be pretty likable last year. And one of the ways, they did it with some personality. They did it with some young players. The biggest thing I thought they did last year is they did it with fairly clean baseball.
Mm-hmm.
For a bunch of young kids, they didn't make a lot of mental mistakes. They didn't make a lot of mistakes in the base paths. They didn't make a lot of defensive errors. They didn't make mental errors on defense. They had a bad bullpen. right? And I gave it up for them. They had some young players that are going to be inconsistent hitting over the course of the year and learning to adjust to big league pitching, et cetera. So they weren't a great team. They were, what, 5 or 6 games under 500, whatever it was, in a short season. But they weren't stupid. And I know that sounds like a backhanded comment, but it's true. They didn't play stupid baseball.
Mm-hmm.
We saw plenty of veteran teams here in the past play stupid baseball. Remember when Lloyd McClendon had to walk everybody around the bases to teach them what to do, and then Robbie managed to get thrown out at all 3 bases later that day?
Yeah, they didn't teach much.
No. Mariners didn't do any of that. They've built some of the right type of culture, and you know, it's such a shame. I was reading an article the other day. It's like ranking the baseball managers. They had service like 25th, and it was very clear that no idea what to say. Like, well, they were good, and then they're rebuilding. Scott should get a better job somewhere. It's like, what does that even mean? How is that a ranking of what kind of a manager Scott Service is versus anyone else in the league? You know what Scott's done over the course of time? And this is why I'll defend him, and I'm really high on him. He's built a culture where a bunch of young kids didn't play stupid baseball. That's an impressive thing to do. That's what a manager can do. He can't make good players out of bad ones. He can't turn young players into veterans. He can't get a guy who hits 220 to hit 320. But he absolutely can build a culture and build a concentration level on his team where you don't play bad baseball and that you get the most out of your ability. And I thought they did last year.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think kind of building a competitive environment as well, that's going to be super fun to mix in some young, great talent.
You're going to see Kelnick this year.
Yep.
I mean, like, you start thinking about last year's, like, they are supposed to see Kelnick and would have if it weren't for the stranger. You're going to see Kelnick this year. Probably going to see Logan Gilbert this year. Julio Rodriguez, maybe not. Maybe another year on Julio. Okay.
You will see him as the number 3 prospect in baseball atop those lists. But which is
you may see Cal Raleigh if he continues to develop.
Well right. So in addition to now another year of Kyle Lewis, another year of Evan White, like, you know, you're starting to really get a sense of which of these guys is and what they're going to look like when they get here. You know, I hope that Kelnick Day is a big thing, that his first day and that he comes up, I hope people are excited about it. And I hope he seems like one of those kids who's going to come up and hit a home run in his first at bat. That's just obviously, just doesn't he seem like that?
Well, he believes he does.
He will be swinging for the fences. That much I can guarantee you.
So do you think Scott more upset about that ranking a couple years ago that put him as like the 25th most handsome manager, or that one that he's 25th overall?
Yeah, I think, well, Howdy did the one about how good looking they were, right?
No, there was an actual, there was actual material out there.
He didn't seem wild about that.
No, he was not happy about
that. I don't blame him. I mean, that's kind of insulting. This one was too, though. I was just like,
well, I mean, was it?
25th. Well,
I mean, and not a shot of Scott. I love Scott. He's done a fantastic job. But what is he? I mean, he's never even managed a playoff game.
No, but is that because of his managing? Like, I think if you're going to take the time to rank the managers, you've got to actually figure out what makes one better than another. And you've got to have more than a sentence about each of them. Otherwise, you're just ranking how good the teams in the league have been.
We like lists, Mike.
I get
we
that.
Make lists.
And
we are a society of lists.
I should say this is in the Boston Globe, so they don't really know who Scott Service is. And Terry Francona was like 3rd on the list.
Like,
so, you know, it doesn't – you don't need to put a whole lot of stock into this. I happened to notice it, read it, and was like, well, that doesn't make any sense at all. So, all right, let's get out of here. I think we've had enough for this week, Brock. Thank you. It was fun to talk to you. I hope whatever construction is going on behind you is done. It was quite the project. I'm glad that now that we're done, it's done.
Yes. Yeah, I kind of tailed off about the same time.
That's great. It's great when things work out that way. All right. We will be back next week. We will discuss whoever it is that I hope that is the Seahawks offensive coordinator and kind of where they go from here and start getting ready for the Super Bowl as well. So we'll catch you guys next week. Till then, hey.
Barn.
See everybody.